and thanks for listening to RTE Radio 1's The Rolling Wave podcast with me, Aoife Nic Cormack. In 1969, siblings Julia Clifford and Dennis Murphy from County Kerry recorded an album called The Star Above the Garter for Cladda Records. The album, with its distinctive cover painting, quickly established itself as one of the classic recordings of Irish traditional music. And this podcast celebrates that album, The Star Above the Garter.
About 5 miles, 5 to 6 miles east of here, Slievenocher, where the pagan kings of Ireland lived, and where Coquelin was seen coming by the Druids from the top of Tower Locher, and he defeated the pagan king and won his doom.
Yes, so this is the area then that's featured so much in the Fenian literature.
It is, for Dermot and Grange were pursued by Fionn McCool, and one of the Macs. If Fionn McCool passing through, remains yet to be seen, full of fear, for he roasted a deer he had slain, for he roasted his venison in his pursuit of Dermot and Grange. And about 3 miles to the west then, the grave of Dermot and Grange is pointed out still on top of a mountain.
The voice of a Mr. T. King from an acetate recording from the 1940s, he was describing the Slieve Luachra area in terms of its rich literary and cultural history. The area known as Slieve Luachra is on the border between Cork and Kerry, but getting people to define exactly where it is difficult. Here's a sample of what Peter Brown discovered in his programme about Padraig O'Keefe.
It's a movable feast. Long ago, it was confined to a few parishes beyond Round Farm, which is where the river Blackwater rises, a place called Doctor's Hill. And you'll find it in Spencer's Fairy Queen, and you refer to the river Blackwater, which was called the Yellow. And there you have Sweet Yellow tumbling from Slieve Luachra steep. Slieve Luachra is the rushy hills, and it was confined to maybe at the most a square mile. It's now half Kerry and most of Cork. Up to the store, Newcastle West, down to Marlon, going way down into Valley Rooney. It's expanding every day. Just controlling the whole country.
I would talk in terms of a rough square between the towns of Newcastle West, Listowel, Killarney and Newmarket, that all of that area, which is upland country, we'll call it hill country, that all of that has a culture of its own, a distinctive culture, and that crosses county boundaries, as you can well imagine. County boundaries are not an important feature at all. And it has a distinct culture of its own because, in a bit like Connemara in a way, it was an isolated part of the country. And, of course, the Irish language was spoken. There was the culture there quite different to the lowland culture. And it still retains a good deal of this.
Lovely, remote country. And it was, after all, the country of poets in the Gaelic tradition. Aegon O'Rahilla, well, particularly Eoin Ró Suleimhne and all that tradition. And I always felt that when the Gaelic tradition was dying out in that area, in some strange way it survived through the music. In musical instruments, that where the language itself was losing ground, that the tradition, the spirit of the tradition, in some way came into the instrumental music, and particularly into Padraig O'Keefe and the people who came after him, like Dennis Murphy.
Con Houlihan, Pat Feely and Ciarán MacMahuna there attempting to define where Slieve Luachra is. Matt Cranich is a fiddle player, of course, but he's also researched and studied the music of Slieve Luachra. And so I asked him the same question. Where exactly is Slieve Luachra?
the Schleivloch is everywhere and nowhere. I suppose the from the music point of view, the boundaries are kind of loose and somewhat indeterminate, but most people would agree that places like Knocknagree, Bally Desmond, Guinea of Gwille, Scarty Glen would form the kind of core, if you like, of Schleivloch. And moving out from there, some people would say it spreads as far east as Newmarket and Kanturk and up to Brusna and Abbeyfeel, and indeed even Rockchapel and so on. So another way of looking at it is that Schleivloch encompasses the locations of those who subscribe to the style of music and play the style of music where those people live. So Ciara Mac-Mahony used to talk about the spirit of the tradition and the spirit of this style of music. So using that idea, the geographic boundaries mightn't be as exact or indeed as important. So in a way, we're seeing a kind of a continuum from the older Gaelic tradition, if you like, of the poetic tradition coming through in the slower tunes here. And I suppose other people will say that even the dance music is expressed in a very kind of poetic way as well by Dennis and Julia on the Star Above the Garter. But also this came from their mentor, Paddy O'Keefe.
Dennis Murphy was born in November 1910 and his sister Julia was born 4 years later in June 1914. They were brought up in Lisheen, Guinea Gwille, County Kerry in a house full of music. Their father, Bill the Weaver as he was known, or Bill the Waver, was a flute player and he encouraged all his children to play music. And then Dennis and Julia also had the good fortune to have had Padraig O'Keefe as their teacher and they became two of his star players. In the late 80s, Peter Brown interviewed Julia Clifford, her sister Bridgie and Johnny O'Leary, and he asked Julia how many children there were in the family.
Nine. One died when she was very young. One died. There was eight of us. And there's just one in America. The rest are dead now, myself and Bridgie. And this girl in America. She plays too.
You all played?
We all play the fiddle. All play the fiddle. My father played the concert flute and that was the only thing.
And he was a well-known musician, wasn't he?
Oh God, very well-known, yeah. We used to have loads of musicians come to the house and everything, you see. All lots of players. Everyone passing the way would come in and play a tune. And good and bad, every way. This fella came one night anyway, and he was he was the world's worst player. He was really bad. And my father couldn't say bad to nobody. He was that kind of a man. And he said, he went out, he said, well, I opened my mouth three times to say you're good and I couldn't.
So with the fiddle playing such a big role in the household, it's hardly surprising that both Dennis and Julia took it up and became such skilled fiddle players. And of course, it also helped that Padraig O'Keefe, the famous Kerry fiddle master, was the local teacher. So they learned from the best as well.
Padraig, of course, was the big influence. Padraig was the master. And he got his first tuition, of course, from Padraig and himself and Julia. And of course, in the to put our own stamp on their music.
Then, of course, Julia was at home, Julia Clifford, and so the two fiddles were going, and that gave it a great, great buzz entirely because, you know, they did quite a lot of playing in octaves and so on, you know. And again, Julia was a very happy person to meet, and there was great, great fun in her music.
And Julie then, the sister, was supposed to be very good. Dennis used to say to me, I was certain to greatness, and he would say, I could never do, he would say, the lovely things that Julie does in the field, which I suppose was true. He said that she used to put in those lovely things with the loading into the music, and he said that used to make it so sweet.
My greatest memory of the two of them playing together, funnily enough now, would be at my own wedding, you know. They seem to have come to some really peak that day. I don't know, it was absolutely fabulous altogether. The music they played that particular day was only fabulous. Their own individual styles would be very, very close. My mother could sort of, even like my mother's living in London for most of her life, and she played like all the general sort of stuff that could be played in other parts of Ireland. But when she came together with Dennis, like, she could, you know, revert back to her Sliabh Lucre way, like, to play with Dennis, you know.
And did she and Dennis play, would they have played at dances and parties and stuff growing up, or would they have played out much?
Oh, yeah, of course they would have been playing and at all these house dances at the time, you know. That would have been the go in those days. I suppose we're talking about the 20s and the 30s, you know, 1920s and 30s. So, say, when she'd be around about 18, 15, and up to maybe 23 or 4, those few years, you know. So I suppose, yeah, there would have been house dances. That was, they were all the go in those days, you know. And, of course, then the church then, they put an end to these house dances. Was it 1935 or something?
The Dance Halls Act.
The Dance Halls Act. Yeah. And that was that KO'd that job. And so that's what they would have played together, those, you know, Dennis and herself, and of course in the house as well.
When the Star Above the Garter came to be made in 1969, Julia had spent most of her time abroad in England. Dennis had spent a great deal of that time in New York. Yet, when they came together to make that recording, The Star Above the Garter, there's a remarkable cohesion, if you like, and it sounds as if they were playing together all their lives, but in fact that is not the case.
I always enjoy listening to them playing reels, because I think when Dennis was in New York, for example, and when Julia was in London, they were able to sit down and play jigs and reels with the best of them. And they did sit down and play jigs and reels with the best of them. So for me, listening to them together playing reels, I always find it very interesting, because you're listening for, you're trying to see, are there traits of, maybe is there a little bit of, is there Clare style sneaking in there? Is there Sligo style? You know, you're trying to see, is there anything there now that they could have picked up from other fiddle players that they've met along their journey, you know? The Island is a very popular session tune, so there's no doubt that they played that while they were immigrants abroad with other musicians, which would naturally have influenced their particular version of it and their interpretation of it. Whereas the second reel in that set is Callaghan's, which would have been directly learned from Patrick O'Keefe, and they're much more unison on Callaghan's than they are in The Lady in the Island. ¶¶ But even within The Lady and the Island, they're much more together in the second part of it. They're much more closer in unison than they are in the first part. The unison in the second part of The Lady and the Island is almost eerie. They're so close together. Their roles and everything are taking place at the same time. Even you can hear the carding and the bowing is matching, you know. Whereas in the first part, you can clearly hear that there are just very small, again, we're only talking minute little details here, like small little changes. That's all you're talking about. But one note is all it takes in the right hands. The right musician driving the fiddle, one note is all it takes.
The repertoire of Slievelocher is interesting because people think of the repertoire of Slievelocher as being polkas and slides and playing for dances, but it's much more complex than that, isn't it? And the range of tunes is much bigger.
Oh yeah, it's much bigger. And sure, when you look at all Julie's recordings, like there's loads of polkas and slides, but there's fabulous reels, and I suppose the fact that she lived in London as well and she was in contact with all these great musicians, Bobby Casey, Dennis McMahon was over there for a while, Lucy Farr, all the people that I've heard of that she would have come in contact with, I suppose made her repertoire a lot wider and more varied, and maybe her like unusual tunes that she would have picked up made her even more interesting, I suppose.
Many people think that the slides and polkas are the defining aspects of this tradition. I'm not sure I go along with that totally. From the performer's point of view, and certainly from Paddy O'Keefe's point of view, the playing of reels and jigs and so on was exceedingly important. However, looked at from the parallel tradition of the dancing legacy, there's no doubt that the slides and polkas feature very prominently in that milieu. It's interesting to look at, if you look at the recordings of, let's say, fiddle music, and in that I include the Star Above the Garter, Kerry Fiddles, the Star of Munster Trio and so on, the polkas do not predominate in the repertoire. On the other hand, if you look at the collections of music from Johnny O'Leary, which are primarily dancing-based, you'll find that the slides and polkas are near the top of the popularity stakes.
It's kind of two different ways of looking at the
yes,
same music,
yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
They said the polka man, they used to call him in the States. Dennis Murphy, the polka man. So he played a lot of polkas. But for the day, were the things he liked them, and Patrick, he played them too, he didn't like them. Everything he played was good. No question about it.
Reels. I could name all the reels. But he'd play slides, and mostly for the dance, he'd play the polka. But if he sat down there and brought up the fiddle, he'd never play a polka. No slide, only all reels.
Julia Mary Murphy, Dennis Murphy's wife there, and before her you heard Aoife O'Keefe, Geraldine O'Callaghan and the late Paddy Cronin. Well, The Star Above the Garter was released by Cladda Records in 1969, and Paddy Maloney, who was managing director of Cladda from 1968, told me a little bit about the background to it.
Well, the Honourable Gareth the Bruin, Gareth Brown, and an awful old rogue he was. Him and I were pals from our teens upwards, you know. And I used to meet him at different functions. But he first had set up with Ivor Brown, and John Montague, they set up Clara Records to make, as he hadn't got an album of Ilion Pipes, he just loved traditional music and that, you know. And so the first LP of Ilion Piping, solo Ilion Pipes, was made by Leo Rousham in 1959. And then went on, I got them home then, you know, and we did Dolly McMahon, and which incidentally Dennis played on, and played fiddle on it. And I think it was the first of its kind for a traditional female artist to have some traditional instruments going along in the, I mean, there was Margaret Barry and there was people out there with banjo and things, but this is the first of its kind. And I was became managing director of Clara, 1968. And it was around that time that three albums came out. The Star Above the Garter with Dennis Murphy and Julie Clifford, and the Cain Sisters, Once I Loved. There was one other one, I'll think of it again, it was a poetry album. But the recording took place around that time. But it was a great excuse for me to hop in my Red Beetle and drive down to Guineagilla 5 or 6 hours, you know, and spend a few days. I sometimes read it would come with me and that, you know, because Dennis's wife was a lovely Julie Mary, and she was a lovely woman altogether. So we'd stay in their house there for, you know, the weekends.
And that was kind of preparing for the recording, kind of.
That's right, preparing for it and getting to know, you know, and of course, the more I heard these tunes, these polkas and slides and all that sort of thing, a lot of which, incidentally, I recorded on Chieftains afterwards and put his name to it, like Dennis Murphy's favourite, and any excuse to get Dennis in on it. He was a lovely man. But maybe 5 or 6 trips down there, and we'd go off out.
Research.
Yes, research. And we'd go off out maybe to these dances, you know, in Scotty Glen, I remember. And they'd hop off the floor, you know, and Dennis would be up there dancing just as much, you know. And Johnny Leary and all the great musicians from down there. It was a great time.
And do you remember anything about the recording of this record in particular? Do you remember, did they obviously came to Dublin to do it, the two of them?
That's right. And I didn't have to come along and do lots of research into tunes, you know what I mean? They had it all, and it was just a matter of getting them to play, and there was very seldom a second take, you know. And, you know, I put it together then eventually in the order it came out in.
Because it's funny listening to it now, because Julia lived in England for a lot of time before that, so they wouldn't have been playing together all the time recently.
That's right.
But they still clicked in.
That's right.
Together.
But she'd come over quite a bit, you know, but once we got going and rehearsal after rehearsal, when I say rehearsal, it's just going down and experiencing another few days, you know, but they were perfect, you know, together and just gelled, and as I say, it didn't take very much to record them in the studio, you know. It was great, you know. We had this launch, and you
the
front.
Where was the launch?
I think it's in the Taylor's Hall. Yeah, that's nearly sure it's the Taylor's Hall, you know. And I haven't got Gareth here, unfortunately, to refer back to. But you know, it's just these parties were just great. Any excuse to have a party, you know, and to be a couple of hundred people there, you know.
O'Callaghan is a fiddle player, and she's studied both Julia Clifford's playing and the duet playing on The Star Above the Garter. Well, let's talk about the playing on the Star Above the Garter, because Dennis Murphy and Julia Clifford, nay Murphy of course, grew up playing together. They had the same teacher, they had the same repertoire, they would have been in the house together. But, and some people feel when they listen to them that it's like hearing one voice, but you've listened to them, you've slowed down the music and you've listened to it, and we'll listen to the, some of those slowed down pieces in a minute. But do you think they had very different styles, different approaches to fiddle playing, or do you hear one when you hear them?
It's a very difficult question to answer. When they're playing together as a duet, they very much revert back to that time before they emigrated, essentially. So it's almost like when they're playing together, it's the music from another era, essentially. It's the music of their childhood and adolescent years and early adulthood. They're playing the music that they received from Patrick O'Keefe. So they're both playing it in the same manner. They're playing it with the same stylistic traits.
Geraldine, that's an excerpt of the Lisheen Slide from the Star Above the Garter, played at its normal pace as they recorded it that day in 1969. Now tell me what you've done here and what we're going to hear now.
So in the slowed down version, like, it's slowed down by 52%.
It's quite a lot.
It is a lot and it sounds very, very different at that pace. But you can, at this pace, you can hear the detail of what's taking place in the two melodic lines. So you can clearly hear what Dennis is playing and what Julia is playing. And what Julia is playing is strikingly different from what Dennis is actually playing. Now, Dennis is essentially taking the main melody, so he's sustaining that while she has dropped down an octave. There tends to be an assumption that octave playing is generally just the melody being played eight notes lower. And I think this proves that it's far more than that. The detail in what she's playing, for example, there's a point where Dennis is playing a longer note, so he's playing a dotted crotchet G, he's playing just a natural kind of a pause in the phrasing of the tune, and Julia is playing a slurred bow triplet beginning on her low G string, which is, he has created the space, she's putting this in here, but that detail is lost when it's at high speed, you know, and when it's at its normal speed, it's very difficult to pick that out and to hear the beauty of it, you know. But there's one very, very interesting part, I feel. At one point, they're actually only four notes away from each other. And again, this goes back now to assumptions. And we all think when we're playing in an octave that you're the full notes, you're the full eight notes of the scale down, and that whatever the octave player is doing, it's all taking place down around there. But they're actually, at one point, they're only four notes removed from each other. Dennis is playing C sharp and Julia is on a G, you know, four and a half notes, I suppose. But
to be specific,
you know, they're very, they're actually quite close together. And I don't think it's as straightforward as saying she's playing a slightly different version of the tune, you know. I think either if you were to transplant what she's doing up the octave, I think it would work just as well as the version of the slide, you know. But at the same time, she's staying within the parameters of the style. She's staying within, she's not doing any, she's not doing anything that's going to in any way upset what Dennis is playing. Like, it's very respectful towards the core melody of the tune, and it's very respectful towards his contribution and what he's doing.
And when on all the tracks on this record, or when they played together, was it always like that? Did he always take the sort of the main melody line and she sort of did the octaves or the other things around him, or did it ever turn the other way around?
Julia's role when performing alongside Dennis, or indeed Patrick O'Keefe, as on Kerry Fiddles, was often to play the tune in unison down one octave. There seems to be a lot of debate as to who did it, why was that person, etc. Maurice O'Keefe, for example, said that Julia was the leader in that regard, and that she had that role because she had long fingers and that she could comfortably reach the lower notes on the low G string. But it was said that they could all do it, but at the same time it seems to have been Julia who did it.
I suppose maybe as well she liked the freedom of being able to do whatever she liked around this sort of solid anchor in the middle.
Absolutely. And it's funny, like, there are things, it suited the tone of her, it actually suited the tone of her instrument. It suited her violin to be the octave player. Like, playing down an octave is very different to playing at standard pitch. The instrument is reacting differently to the technique that you're applying to it, and it is a very, very skilled practice.
It says a lot, though, doesn't it, as well, about the partnership and the intimacy of the two musicians, because she knew where Dennis was going to go with each tune, with each note, and she knew then exactly how to fit mm-hmm. around him.
There was a confidence that existed between Dennis and Julia that led to the Star Above the Garter. That confidence is what you're talking about there, like, and that's based on a childhood bond created from learning their music together, from having so many shared musical experiences over the years. Another interesting point, 4 of the tracks on Kerry Fiddles were Dennis and Julia performing as a duet. So they had, before the Star Above the Garter ever came into being, it was trialled, if you like, in 1952. They had experience of playing as this duet, and, you know, all of that confidence is what led to the incredible technical mastery of the Star Above the Garter.
Geraldine, duet playing is clearly a very important feature of traditional music. It's a format, I suppose, that works very well because you have two voices that can be clearly heard. If there's sympathy between the and empathy between the two musicians, it works very well, and yet the two voices can be distinct. I know you've done some work on duet playing. What have you found, or why does it work, or why does it suit the traditional style so well?
So the duet offers traditional musicians both security and freedom, and it's particularly suited to traditional music because of that, and it allows musicians to express themselves, and it gives them artistic freedom, essentially. When you're in a solo performance context, there's more pressure and responsibility to maintain the integrity of the performance, whereas in the duet there is that. Yeah. There's a musical dialogue that takes place between two musicians where each musician is feeding off the other. One is receiving ideas from the other and replicating it. And it's a type of dialogue that takes place between the two. And it's very well suited to traditional music today because of the emphasis today on listening. And the function of traditional music today, arguably, is listening.
As opposed to dancing, you mean?
As opposed to dancing, exactly, yeah.
Except for Seamus Innes and Willie Clancy, you know, Other than most other musicians of that generation didn't play airs seriously. Unless they were kind of air players, if you like. There was a very smallish number of people who were kind of, they were air players rather than reel and jig players. But the people who played, you know, reels and jigs and hornpipes, generally speaking, they didn't play airs, with the exception of the few people I mentioned. But then when you went to Slieve Rooker, you had Paddy O'Keefe, Julia and Dennis all playing these airs very beautifully, with a completely different approach to what you had anywhere else, which it was obviously kind of fiddle versions. But Queenie O'Gonnell, I never had that until we had that from Slieve Rooker. It's gone around a bit more about, but still, it seems you can trace it back to Slieve Rooker.
I was going to say all of Padraig's pupils, but certainly the I suppose what you might call the better of Padraig's pupils, he taught quite an amount of slow airs to them, and the idea of playing slow airs. So they would say that they got this directly from Paddy O'Keefe. Dennis and Julia acquired this love of the slower tune and the ability to be able to play these slower tunes. So it's not surprising then to me, when time came to make this recording, that they would feature slow airs as part of the repertoire.
Julia's air playing it's so unique to Julia, and it's so masterful. The strength of her bowing while she's playing airs, like, there's great power in her slow air playing, but they're also very subtle. What I see in her air playing is that she shows her femininity, for example, she shows her vulnerability, but there's also great power. And I find that in her air playing, you can hear her humanity.
The cover for his time was very unusual. Even now, it's an amazing cover.
Great. When I look at it, I haven't looked at this, and the big one, you know, for the album is superb altogether. But this is Dennis himself here, you know. But I mean, the big full sleeve was the painting for the sleeve, and she's a young artist that Gareth knew from some friends in Paris. And so she came over and brought this painting with her. I remember I had sent it back 3 times to the printers. Poor old Lee Miller's, I drove mad because I wasn't getting the definition. You know, it was a bit blurred and that sort of stuff, you know. But I at that stage, you know, I just started with Clara, and I was beginning to wonder, because the old style, apart from the Eddie Delaney's that he did, the Chieftains 1, 2 and 3 and all that, but a lot of them had just photographs posing and that sort of stuff, you know. And this went completely away from that, and fair play to her, she captured it wonderfully, you know. I mean, when it turned up, Gareth and I nearly died, you know. We said, oh my God, are we sure? But I thought it was fantastic, you know.
Thank you.
Yes, I think the Star Above the Garter was the first recording of that kind and style and repertoire of music. I don't know of anything that was done before that.
And tell me, Matt, because obviously the climate now is very different from what it would have been in terms of reception of music in the 60s. So when this record was released in the 1960s, I mean, would it have sounded very different to people, or would people have been familiar with the Slí of Luachra sound, or what kind of reaction do you think it got?
I suppose it got mixed reaction, if my memory served me correctly, in the sense that for people who were followers of this music and who realised the importance of portraying the minority traditions, it was exceedingly important release for that constituency of people. But on the other hand, it didn't fit the model, so to speak, of the inherited and given model of the Sligo style of fiddle playing, and that this was the way, so to speak, the standardised way that music should be performed and played. So you had a variety of, I suppose, feelings and emotions being evoked by this. At one extreme, people thought that it was just the business, and at the other extreme, people were saying, Coleman is much better, this kind of talk. But I think since then that the situation has changed, and people have begun to realise the worth and the beauty of the what one might call the minority traditions. Look at the great work that has been done with regard to Donegal fiddle playing, for example. And of course, we have the development or the expansion, if you like, of this Slí of Luachra, expansion of interest in the Slí of Luachra style, and of course also Clare music and other parts of the country as well. Indeed,
the title of the album, "The Star Above the Garter," where does that title come from?
Well, that's an intriguing question, Aoife. I do have here at home one of Paddy O'Keefe's manuscripts for that particular tune, and he calls the tune "A Slide, the Star and Garter." And it's this dim but interestingly enough, then when the LP came out, it was called "The Star Above the Garter." I spoke to Paddy Maloney about this, and I think the feeling is that Garrett the Brown, for divilment or whatever, or sense of humour, decided to call the LP "The Star Above the Garter." But the tune in Paddy's own handwriting is "The Star and Garter." So make what you will of that.
The Star Above is the one that has stuck.
Yes,
anyway.
Yes, yeah.
For listening to the Rolling Wave podcast. For rights reasons, the music here is shorter than in the original broadcasts. So if you'd like to hear the full versions, just go to rte.ie/radio1. This programme was broadcast on April 26th, 2020. Till the next time, Gur Míle Maithigh agus Slán.